Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And I have one question at the very top of my mind as we begin the podcast this week. Where is the news? What happened to the news? There's no news anymore. I don't think this has ever happened before. That the news has stopped in favor of a political soap opera. You can't get any real news. Are you people aware that there was a suicide attack in Manbij, Syria, that killed 19 people, including four Americans? I barely found out about it by accident. If you drive around like I do during the day and you listen to the radio, or if you watch the cable news at night, you'll never know that this happened. Because all they're talking about is Trump and Pelosi and whoever, Cohen. I don't have to tell you. You know them all by heart. But you don't know about the American killed in, about the four Americans killed in Syria because there's no room for the news anymore. All right, I just wanted to express my displeasure about that. Oh, by the way, Al-Shabaab in Kenya, in Nairobi, they attacked a hotel and shopping complex in Nairobi. One of the terrorists is the son of a Kenyan military officer. 11 people detained, 21 people killed, including an American who survived 9/11 because he couldn't make it to work on time. Many of his co-workers were killed. Anyway, a very compelling story about this fellow, a banker who... he put aside a very lucrative career to go to Kenya to try to help poor people by investing. I mean, the real way, not through charity, but by trying to help people build businesses. Anyway, but there was no news. There was no room for any of that news. So this is the show where you can tune in to find out that there is other news. There's other things happening. It's not just all the Donald Trump, Nancy Pelosi soap opera. And we're going to get to some of that. No, not Donald Trump. We're going to get some of the other news. No. Now, I know that the Trump soap opera must be some kind of ratings boom. It must be. And what it really shows is that all of these talking heads, even the ones who have convinced you that they're conservative, they care more about ratings than about actually reporting on actually important news. That you've all been bamboozled, all of us. Anyway, but first I'm going to start by talking about someone other than Donald Trump. Karen Pence. I said Karen Pence. Are you guys familiar with Karen? Well, now before I get to Karen Pence, that's the wife of the vice president, Mike Pence. It's not that we don't do any political news. It's that we do some other thing. That's all. But before I get to Karen Pence, I want to welcome the portion of the 1st Marine Air Wing that connected with me on Facebook over the past week. It was like a reunion. It was a snowball effect. One guy found one guy who found another guy who found another guy I never heard of, but then when I talked to him, I remember that guy. So anyway, we all connected up on Facebook, and we traded the where are you and what have you been doing, that type of stuff. And anyway, so I'll post this up on the Facebook there, and we'll see how many of them I ever hear from again after this show. Oh, and so I will let my fellow Marine. Now, here's the thing. I did say the 1st Marine Air Wing, and I want to be clear about something. When it comes to Marines, having known a few of them, most of us former Marines who were in the Air Wing, we don't necessarily lead with that. We just kind of leave it at Marines. Because when someone finds out that you were in the air wing, that's kind of like telling somebody, yeah, I was with the Navy SEALs, and then they find out that you were the cook. Now, when you tell them you're a Marine, they picture you crawling through the mud with a knife in your mouth and eating bugs and snakes and killing the enemy with your bare hands. But when they find out you were in the air wing, they know that you didn't cut your hair and you laid around the barracks and drank beer and chased girls and just waiting on the Russians. Never heard a shot fired in anger. You barely ever even slept in a tent, and when you did, there was another tent with hot showers. Now, that's just me. Now, a lot of my buddies who were in the 1st Marine Air Wing, they may have gone on to other more arduous duties and duty stations there. But me, myself, and I stayed in Okinawa, Japan, in the 1st Marine Air Wing for my entire glorious military career. And then I got out of there as fast as I could. And then the war started. And I remember going down to the recruiter's office saying, am I going to have to go back in for the war? This is back during the first Gulf War, and all my buddies were shipping over there to Iraq. And he looked at my lottery number, and he said, well, he said the war would have to last at least a year. And so then when it was over in like 45 minutes, I was really glad. So anyway, welcome to the 1st Marine Air Wing veterans. And a couple of them, I think, were cooks. And not that there's anything wrong with that. I mean, somebody's got to feed the troops, right? All right, so we got that out of the way. Why did you bring these goldfish crackers?
I ate them.
Ladies and gentlemen, my extremely attractive audio engineer. So she knows I'm dieting. Because I told you, if you've been listening to the show, I quit smoking and I started to get really fat. So she walks into the studio today with a bowl of those little goldfish crackers, the cheesy, salty ones. That's the enemy of anyone dieting, ever. You can't bring those in here. And they are not conducive to broadcasting because they're dry and crispy and crunchy. And they don't give your mouth any moisture. They suck up the moisture. What you should have brought me was a small piece of chocolate, which I would still be open to if you were to retrieve one at some point during the show. So you know what's interesting about dieting is that you learn how many calories you burn doing all kinds of various activities, riding a bike, washing the dishes, vacuuming. Vacuuming's pretty hard. I mean, that burns some calories. So we're always looking at, okay, how many calories can I burn if I do X, Y, Z? I have yet to find an accurate analysis of the number of calories burned podcasting. But now we're sitting most of the time. Except there are some times when I'm doing certain stories when my extremely attractive audio engineer has to get up and leave because, well, you'll find out for a variety of reasons. Then sometimes she gets bored and she just needs to go do something interesting. Now let's get to from the politics file. So we don't do the soap opera, but we do talk politics sometimes here. So from the politics file, the newstrust.org, who I've never heard of, but I assume that they're okay. It's Thomson Reuters, so it's a legitimate news source, a wire service anyways. They say that Karen Pence is the wife of Vice President Mike Pence, and I checked that out and it's true. Now they also say that she is now teaching art classes at Emmanuel Christian School in Virginia. And that's got the homos freaked out because Emmanuel Christian School is one of the few Christian schools left in the country that has a policy against homos. Not just against, they're against hiring homos. They're against enrolling homo students. And if your mom and dad or your mom and mom or your dad and dad are homos, they don't want you at their school, and that's in their written policy, at least last we checked. Now, this story came out on Wednesday. And let's see, she got this job, and immediately the head of GLAAD called on Karen Pence to resign. And so, well, it's Sunday now. So since she's married to Mike Pence, I'm assuming she has resigned. Or I should say, before the show, I assumed that she had resigned. But I looked it up, and she has yet to resign, which tells me she's definitely tougher than her husband, Mike Pence. Mike Pence, to me, represents the pinnacle of the slope-shouldered, slack-jawed, weak-kneed Republican. I know a lot of people think that he's a warrior for religious liberties and a warrior. And I have no doubt that the man is a child of God and follows Jesus Christ. Okay, I have no doubt about that. Now, how he could be in the job he's in, being an actual Christian, I mean, it's really hard for me to figure that out, but I'm sure it's true. But he is a weak-kneed, slack-jawed, mealy-mouthed, spineless Republican, okay, is what he is. So, how do I know that? Why? Well, do you remember what happened in Indiana when he signed a law protecting religious liberties? So right there, okay, Mr. Pence, you should have stopped with your pen and you should have thought, wait a second, a law to protect religious liberty? What about the First Amendment to the Constitution? Is that no longer in effect? You see, the thing is, when you have to pass a law to protect religious liberty, You're basically admitting that you have allowed the First Amendment to be nullified by the radical left and the queers and the freaks and the weirdos. So right there, you're already disqualified. If you were working in government and you allowed that to happen, you have disqualified yourself, Mr. Pence. But instead, he goes from being the governor of Indiana to the vice president of the United States. He'll probably be the president of the United States. Anyways, but apparently his wife, Karen, she is still teaching at Emmanuel Christian School, and it still has a policy against queers and freaks and deviants and trannies and weirdos, and it has not yet been burned to the ground by activists from GLAAD. But they probably have to put up a wall around Emmanuel Christian School before they worry about the border to try to protect the vice president's wife, because the homos are freaking out. Anyway, I was very encouraged to know that there's still a Christian school that actually takes a position, a biblical position on homosexuality. That was just encouraging. So a hat tip to Karen Pence for not backing down. I like that girl. I like her. All right. Now, speaking of girls, let's go to Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Ruth Bader Ginsburg may be dead for all we know. They could have her hooked up to a machine and it's embalming her so that they can pull off one of the greatest scams in the history of politics by somehow not allowing Donald Trump to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg. No, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I don't think she's dead, although I haven't seen her around. And I haven't heard from her. And she just canceled. Let's see here. She was going to speak at the David, at the David Rubenstein Y on 92nd Street. I'm sorry, the 92nd Street Y with David Rubenstein. Now, as far as we know, David Rubenstein will still be speaking because he is not comatose or dead. But Ruth Bader Ginsburg says that she regrets she is unable to attend. She's curtailing travel and focusing on her work while recuperating. Uh-huh. So I ask the question again, is she already dead? Have they hooked her up to a breathing machine, and are they preparing to build her a temple and start a religion worshiping Ruth Bader Ginsburg? And when you go to the temple and you ask, well, wait a minute, what's that smell? They're going to say, wait, Ruth identifies as a living person, huh? And we have no right to question how Ruth Bader Ginsburg self-identifies. And if you do, you're obviously a sexist. And by the way, one more thing. You sexist right-wing religious fanatics who want to insist that just because there's that smell in the temple and nobody's seen Ruth in about 18 months... Just one more thing. She also now prefers to be referred to with the pronoun they. Nobody rules these streets at night but me. Somebody arrest that man for the abuse of reverberation. That was just too much reverberation. By the way, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, 85 years old. And she looks every minute of it, right? Yeah. She looks older, yeah. That's a very evil woman. Possibly, she is more responsible for the destruction of our nation and the families of our nation and the moral fiber of our nation than any other single individual except Howard, the Playboy guy. I can't remember his name. Howard, right? No? Jeff? Biff? Hugh. Except possibly Hugh Hefner. Hugh Hefner and Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Boy, they're going to roast in hell together in a particularly hot area where the flames are mostly blue all the time. Very little orange. That's going to be the blue flame for them. All right, now. By the way, and I said girls, and I got another story about a girl that I'm about to do. And this week was the Women's March, by the way, everywhere except in Northern California, where they had a problem with diversity. If you haven't heard that, go back a couple, three shows, because not only was it an interesting social commentary, it was also funny. Now, so is it sexist to call women girls? By the way, I think it probably is considered sexist to call adult women girls. And so some of you may call upon me to apologize, but let me defend my position, because I understand that professional women tell us that what they really want is our respect, and they want to be treated as professionals, and they want to be treated just like men. That's what they tell us. But if you've worked with women in the professional world, it becomes clear immediately that working with women is definitely different than working with men, okay? And while they tell us that they don't want us to notice anything about any differences between men and women and them and me and you and Jack and Biff and Jenny, they all want to look younger, okay? All of them. So I am not going to apologize for calling women girls, because they all want to look younger, so I'm just trying to do my part to let them know that they look good. All right, so let's go to the Reverend Jackie Lewis. The Right Reverend Jackie Lewis spoke at the Women's March on Saturday. That's right. And we have some excerpts. That was an excerpt. We have some excerpts from her speech at the Women's March in New York at the Middle Collegiate Church. Now, here's the thing about these churches that are hosting the Women's March. None of them are concerned about losing their tax-exempt status, despite the fact that myriad political statements were made from the pulpits of all these churches across America. If you're a pro-abort, homosexualist, freak, open-border socialist, you can pretty much say whatever you want from the pulpit, and the government doesn't seem to care. If, on the other hand, you are a conservative, Christian, straight, normal church, you better be careful about what you say, because you just might get in trouble. Now, let's go to the Women's March in New York at the church, the Middle Collegiate Church. It's a middle church. They don't really want to take a position on anything too far left or too far right. They're just right down the middle, which we all know is exactly what Jesus liked. Remember, he said, if you're hot, you're hot. If you're cold, you're cold. If you're lukewarm, I'll spit you out of my mouth. I would drop the name middle from my church, but they're probably not familiar with that Bible verse. More than likely, they have no idea. All right, here is the Right Reverend Jackie Lewis at the Women's March in New York. Can we roll that tape?
I am so glad to be able to follow my indigenous family and share some words of blessing. I tell you what it means for me to be a Christian pastor. Now, they's all kind of Christians, but I'm the kind that believe that they more than one path to God, and the kind that believe that every single body, no matter who you love, you all created by God exactly like you is. Now, I am really clear that I understand that I follow Jesus, And Jesus was a Pole, Jewish, Palestinian, Afro-Semitic, homeless refugee. And that's who I follow, that refugee right there. Now, we don't all believe the same things about God. And some of us don't believe in God at all. We don't have the same tactics and we don't have the same strategies. But we all agree on this. Our common enemy is white supremacy. Our common enemy is transphobia. The crowd went wild. Our common enemy is sexism and our common enemy is greed. Movements are messy. But sister, we're going to have to move together.
Unquote. That was, thank you. Yes, round of applause for the Right Reverend Jackie Lewis. She said all that.
She?
She, yeah, Jackie. J-A-C-Q-U-I. Jackie. Jackie Lewis. Now, she made that speech to the mostly white, upper middle class, relatively wealthy crowd of unattractive lesbians. Did I mention they were mostly white? Okay. Well, there you have it, folks. She said some other stuff, but it was kind of crude. And so I didn't want to get into that. But there you have Jackie Lewis. And that ends the... That ends our... what would you call that? That was a swerve into feminism there. We had... let me just go back through here. We had 1, 2, 3 girl stories in a row. Which is kind of rare here at the Weekly Worldview. But we're glad... Well, we're glad for all of them, except for Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Jackie Lewis. So I guess we're really only glad for one of them. So I have to apologize for those last two stories altogether, ladies and gentlemen. Meanwhile, Emmanuel Macron, who is the girlishly figured prime minister there in France, has started to arm police with semi-automatic weapons and live ammunition against the Yellow Jackets. The Yellow Jacket protesters are burning the cars. They're smashing the light posts, breaking windows, setting things on fire. I know they call themselves the Yellow Vests, but I like to call them the Yellow Jackets. It's because I like it better. And so there. So who is reporting here? The Daily Mail is reporting that they observed police deployed with semi-automatic weapons and live ammunition. And many French citizens are outraged that the president would threaten live fire on people who are hurling bricks and starting fires in town. Okay? The former conservative minister, Luke Ferry, he called for live fire weeks ago. He said, these people are beating up police. This has to end. So here's the thing, ladies and gentlemen. I know that the Yellow Jacket riots started because of the socialist left and their insane policies on climate change and taxing gasoline to the point to where the average Frenchman is spending a third of his income probably just on gasoline, trying to get around town, just on transportation. So I understand how that all started. And my sympathies go out to all the poor European people who, through their own lack of intelligence and morality and hard work and just respect for God and truth, have found themselves in the position where they're ruled by a bunch of psychopathic, sexually deviant, freakish, weird politicians. But that's, you know, it's partially their own fault. The people who are rioting are the same people who voted for Emmanuel Macron and all the other socialist, deviant weirdos. But my heart goes out to you because we all make mistakes, and it's nice that you realize you've made a mistake. But you cannot hurl bricks, and you cannot start fires, okay? You cannot riot. That's all there is to it. No matter what, it doesn't matter what point you're trying to make, you cannot riot. In fact, it's not a question of should the government deploy live fire against rioters. That's not the question. Or it shouldn't be the question. It should be obvious to everyone in government that rioters, if a riot occurs, the rioters must be shot and killed early on in the rioting. That it's the obligation of the government to shoot and kill anyone who's rioting. Because if you shoot and kill rioters early on in the rioting, then early on becomes the end of the riot. Yes, the rioting stops, and you don't even have to kill a whole lot of them. Although I do believe that it is the obligation of the government, if a riot starts, to lay down some serious grazing fire and just clear the street. And you do that one time and the riots stop. And so the problem is, see, is that the government who has this obligation to stop the riots, they're so evil and corrupt that there's just no good. There's no good guy here. There's very few good guys left, folks. There's very few. You've got the one side who wants to turn your son queer and molest your daughter and steal all of your money and make the kids feel guilty about climate change while they stuff their pockets full of money and hire all their derelict relatives. That's the government in Europe and pretty much, well, pretty much everywhere. And then on the other side, you've got the millennials who want to throw bricks and start fires and wreck things. So who are the good guys? Well, there's no good guys. Folks, we have a dwindling reservoir of good guys. So anyway, I'm glad you've tuned into the Weekly Worldview because we are the good guys. We're the normal people that are left. We want our kids to grow up and get jobs and be productive and have children and then grandchildren. And then out beyond that, those are just our aspirations. And beyond that, we're fairly flexible. That okay? So we are the good guys. Now, in case you are depressed, let's go to the science file because researchers in Queensland, Australia, led by a team at the University of Queensland, there in Australia, have discovered a new class of blood pressure regulating peptides in the venom of vampire bats. And they say that these proteins, these peptides, may help revolutionize treatments for ailments like hypertension, heart failure, kidney diseases, and help with wound healing in burns. It's from the venom of vampire bats. Now listen to this. The people reporting this, the studyfinds.org, they say the peptides are mutated forms of the calcitonin gene-related peptide, CGRP, used. So I don't like that word mutated. They say it's mutated. How do you know it's mutated? I mean, how many mutations help with hypertension, heart failure, kidney disease, and burns? This professor says these are mutated peptides. Well, anyway, let's leave that aside. This opens up a new track to find new peptide variations and potential wonder drugs. Yes, and he says he says this is an example of why it's important to protect nature, since we can't predict where the next great biologically sourced drug discovery is going to come from. Now, I agree with him on that. I'm a conservative, but I believe in conserving nature as well. I don't necessarily think it's the job of governing officials' slow-witted nephews to head divisions in the government to preserve nature. I think there are people out there who love nature, who would love to make a living preserving nature, and I think the drug companies probably have enough money to make that happen privately, so I don't think we have to get into all that. And let me just get back to this idea of mutations. Folks, I've been around long enough to observe that nothing beneficial in nature happens by accident. Things that happen by accident in nature are generally detrimental. And especially when you've got a system, a series of peptides that are beneficial, that's not a mutation. No. That, my friends, are the fingerprints of the living God. When I start to lose it all, security run through the wall. Future dreams we have to realize. A thousand skeptic hands won't keep us from the things we plan. We'll be right back. sorry. Let me break in on that. I was waiting for the guitar solo. I'm like, where's the guitar solo? What is she doing? Has she lost her mind? I'm reporting on a scientific and what's his name? Howard Jones. Howard Jones, right? All right. Now, see, I've grown and I have moderated over the years, because there was a time when I wouldn't tolerate that. I wouldn't have that. In fact, I remember, I'll do this for one of my Marine Corps buddies who found me on Facebook. I remember getting in my car early one morning, getting ready to head around the flight line from the barracks to the hangar there area where we worked. And he whipped out a cassette with George Michael on it. And I was like, what is that doing in my car? Anyway, I said, does that have keyboards? I said, I heard them songs. That doesn't have keyboards. No, you're not playing that. So anyway, he did play it, and I actually ended up liking that George Michael record, despite the fact of my issues with George Michael's lifestyle and all that. But let's move on. Now that we've reported on science, let's go to the science really file, where we go to the Pentagon, where the Pentagon has posted a notification on the Federal Business Opportunities website. Is there still reverb, or is that just my head? It's that Van Halen song's coming back to me there. I think that bled reverb all through the board. We can't get it out. You have to wait like 10 days for the reverb to finally settle down. All right. Now, the Pentagon has posted, they're seeking concepts, which is nice, because if they're seeking concepts, maybe I could apply. Since I don't have anything actual that the Pentagon might need, I could come up with some concepts. Here's what they're looking for. Concepts exploring new computational frameworks drawn from the impressive computational capabilities of very small flying insects. The Pentagon wants people who know something about how bugs' minds work, because they're very impressed with it. And my friend Bob Enyart and Fred Williams over at Real Science Radio should apply for this, because they've already laid a bunch of this stuff out. And by the way, the Pentagon has $1 million they're ready to award out. And over at Real Science Radio, I heard a show about how bees pollinate flowers, and how a bee, if I remember correctly, it's way too sophisticated for a layman like myself to fully explain. But basically, a bee, he's only got 15 neurons. It's not like he's got a big old brain, but somehow he can calculate the space between the flowers to follow the most efficient path to get all the flowers and get all the pollen that he needs, or nectar, whatever the bug is doing in there. He knows what he's doing, and he knows how to do it, and he does it with using virtually no energy and virtually no brain power. And the Pentagon is looking at these bugs, and they're saying, wow, and maybe we could study these and figure out how to make better weapons. And it's just very interesting and fascinating. But you may ask, why does this story find itself in the science really file? Is because of the next sentence. I think this is from the author at Breitbart. This is from the reporter at Breitbart. He says these flying insects, he says evolutionary pressures have forced scale size energy reduction without the loss of performance. So Mr. Author there at Breitbart, whose name I didn't write down because I don't care that much. Mr. Author at Breitbart, evolution cannot force scale size and energy reduction without a loss of performance. That's completely illogical. Ask any engineer, how do you reduce scale, size, and energy needs without a loss of performance? And they say, well, you have to work really hard. And it's really hard to figure out, and it's really hard to do. And it takes intricately designed systems to manage that. It doesn't happen accidentally through your fairy tale of evolution, which is ridiculous to even think that that could happen. But that's what this author at Breitbart wrote with a straight face, I'm imagining. All right. So anyway, more from the story. The Pentagon wants to engineer robots that are quicker, more energy efficient, and easier to train. Really, why not just build one robot and then wait for it to evolve? Huh? Just put it in a dark room. Introduce some water mist or vapor or whatever. Or why not just put a turtle in a room and just wait? It'll happen. Come on, guys. Wait for evolution. All right. I know, you could say we don't have time. I understand that argument. But there's not enough time in the whole history of the universe. No matter how long that time you want to make, there's not enough time for a random mutations to engender a scale size and energy reduction without the loss of performance. It's not going to happen no matter how much time you give it, folks. Anyway, this author... Oh, no. Wait, who is this? This has quotation marks around it, but I don't know who's talking. And that's probably because I may not have copied this whole story, which is highly unprofessional. But you can only fit so much stuff on one sheet of paper. Anyway, this is from the document. This is from the actual government document. It says, the document reads, quote, "Nature has forced on these small insects miniaturization and energy efficiency," at which point every engineer everywhere laughed hysterically and almost wet their pants because it's so ridiculous. The document then reads, "Studying miniaturized insects may reveal fundamental innovations in architecture," what? "And computation analogous to their simultaneous simplicity, efficiency, and complex functionality." So you just use the words architecture and complex functionality. And you say nature forced that. Uh-huh. Tell that to an architect. Maybe why am I paying an architect $1,000 when I could just wait for nature to build my house? Maybe if I was stumbling through the forest, I might look down and find the blueprints for free. Nature, it just happened. It was incredible. Anyway, you can't have architecture without an architect, ladies and gentlemen. And you can't have complex functionality without intricately designed systems. And when you start studying bugs, folks, I tell you what, it will blow your mind how sophisticated they are. And so I am encouraging, if Bob and Fred are listening over at Real Science Radio, I think you should get on this site and you need to get your applications in, because you've probably already completed 10 to 15% of the work necessary for what the Defense Department is looking for here. So get the team working on that. Now, this research, by the way, into bugs, something that, you know, it appears so simple and so small, this research into how bugs work could lead to entirely new ways in order to find solutions to compelling problems. Entirely new ways to find solutions to compelling problems. I can barely read, folks, but that's only because of the typos and the misspellings in this government document. Anyway, I get so annoyed. It's like nobody edits anything anymore. And everybody barely speaks English. I had to break that sentence up in order to make it grammatically correct. And then I had a hard time reading it. The winning company will receive $1 million. I think it should go to Fred Williams and Bob Enyart at Real Science Radio. And they could cut in, Walt Brown on a little of that. If you're not familiar with Walt Brown, ladies and gentlemen, Walt Brown is the guy who can tell you how we got here, physically, geologically. He's a PhD from MIT. And if that's not good enough for you, then you're awfully arrogant to assume that you know more than a PhD from MIT. He also taught mathematics at the Air Force Academy. So he's a pretty smart guy, and he has some theories about why the Earth looks the way it does and how we got here and how does that all match up with the biblical story that all the left-wing freaks and deviants and lesbians and queers make fun of. How is it that the geology lines up with biblical truth? Anyway, if you're interested in finding out about that, go to creationscience.com or just Google Walt Brown, the hydroplate theory. Check it out. It's interesting stuff, and it will blow your mind as well, along with the bugs. And definitely check out Real Science Radio, and I think you can just type in insect. Just search for insects. There's several shows on there. All right, now, ladies and gentlemen, we have a story here about Generation Z, which I thought Generation Z happened quite some time ago, but apparently demographers and advertising agencies keep moving the goalposts on Generation Z. See, I'm Generation X. And then Generation Y, they didn't like that, so they called them the Millennials. And now they say Generation Z, okay? Generation Z are people born after 1996. They're currently between the ages of... What? Well, they're currently between the ages of zero and approximately, what, 23, somewhere in there. But the advertising agencies target the group between ages 13 and 21. 13 and 21 are Generation Z, and I've got a report from thehill.com that says they are the most liberal demographic yet. That's right. The post-millennial generation, they say, dubbed Generation Z, which I wouldn't like that if I was a member of that generation. I'd be like, hold on a second, because that sounds like that's it. That's all over after that. I don't want to be involved in any kind of self-fulfilling prophecy by you Madison Avenue geniuses that we're going to be the last. Now, they may be the last generation to experience America with any modicum of freedom and prosperity and Christianity. They may be the last generation. This could be a self-fulfilling prophecy. Generation Z is the end. No, we don't go to AA after that. It's over. America, as you know, it is over. It'll be run by the Chinese. And they'll start with generation, well, whatever their symbol is there. Generation Kanji. No. Do the Chinese call it Kanji?
No.
No, what do they call it?
I don't know.
You don't know what they call it? You're Asian. All right, anyway, Generation Z, they say the government should do more to solve problems. Whereas my generation, my parents' generation, and the World War II generation, we all, at least a majority of us, thought the government was trying to do way too much stuff. Well, Generation Z has been thoroughly brainwashed in the public schools. The public schools, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, are the worst thing you can inflict upon your children or your grandchildren. You should get your children out of the government schools. In fact, we're going to call this reason number 1,181. To get or keep your children out of the government schools because they may end up brainwashed, socialist, liberal losers. They may end up as Generation Z. They say the government should do more. They say they're the most racially and ethnically diverse generation. Big deal. Who cares? I thought we weren't supposed to care about race. I mean, I remember growing up. The whole idea was to not see race and not talk about race. Get over all that. We were supposed to get over all that in like 1870, I thought, or at least 1964. Why are we still obsessed with race in 2019? I don't get it. And I'm sure that Generation Z is probably more race obsessed than any other generation because they've been brainwashed in the government schools. The reporter here says that Generation Z is on track to be the most well-educated generation we've seen. Now that, my friend, is a highly subjective statement because well-educated, what does that mean? Does that mean you know how to put a condom on a banana and you know how to refer to people by gender-neutral pronouns? Or does that mean you know how to do math? Because if it's the latter, they're not going to be the most well-educated generation, right? Does that mean you know how to download pornography on your tablet? Or does that mean you're familiar with biblical truth? Because if it's the latter, they are not going to be the most well-educated generation. They're going to be a lost generation. And we're here at the Weekly Worldview. We're throwing a line out with one of those lifesavers, life preservers on there. We're throwing it out there to the post-millennial generation because we want to help. Let's see. A third of Generation Z say they know someone who prefers to be addressed using gender-neutral pronouns. Gender-neutral pronouns. Now, is that bad grammar, or are they saying they know someone who likes to be referred to by more than one gender-neutral pronoun? Is that that's how confusing it gets, folks. I can't tell anymore. You want to be called they and Z and X? I don't understand. Anyway, you know, so more than half of them are socialists. A third of them are very familiar with this idea of gender fluidity. My guess is they'll probably be the first generation where the majority of them will at least experiment with homosexuality. That's what I'm guessing. And I'm scared. I'm scared for Generation Z. I'm scared for Generation Z. I have children who technically fit into the definition of Generation Z, but I can assure you they are not. It's the Weekly Worldview, folks. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for sticking with us. Now, speaking of kids and girls, I have a girl. I have a daughter. If you've listened to the show, you know about the Bird Whisperer, and you know about many of her unique talents and skills. But we have two other daughters who will remain nameless, and I haven't thought of a nickname for my middle daughter. But yesterday, we were sitting at the table at a fast food joint, and we're eating some fast food, and she sniffed the napkin, and she said, "This napkin smells funny." And the Bird Whisperer said, "I think it's recycled." And our middle girl said, "It's gross that they recycle napkins." I about fell off my stool. That was so funny. That's gross. You mean like from like toilet paper and other people's paper plates and what? That's disgusting. Anyway, and then we got into the definition of organic. See, that reminded me of a time when I was walking with my young daughter through the grocery store, and we were observing the fruits and vegetables, and there was one whole section that said organic. And so I believe it was the Bird Whisperer. And she said, "Daddy, what is organic?" I said, "I'm not sure, but I think it means it had bugs on it." And there was another lady shopping, and she actually burst out loud laughing. That was pretty funny. So anyway, we raise our children in the fear and the admonition of the Lord, and we do not teach them that it's appropriate to use gender-neutral anything, not just pronouns, okay? Anyway, we're raising them to be young ladies and women, and then eventually they'll get to the point where they're older and they want to look younger, and they'll appreciate being referred to as girls. Now, talking about young people, let's get to Google here. We've had a meltdown at Google. There was a meltdown this past week at Google because an executive there used the word family. He used the word family in a weekly presentation that he gives, and one employee stormed out of the session. Stormed out. Uh-huh. Why? Because, well, let's get back to that. So the presenter... What happened was this employee stormed out. He was upset that the presenter continually used the word family as a synonym for a household with children. And then there's a period after that. And then you're reading the story and you're like, well, wait a second. He was using the word family. The word family is not a synonym for household with children. Who says household with children? Family is a standalone concept. It's not a synonym for anything, or at least it wasn't. But here's the scary part, folks. For the younger generation, the word family, it's become a synonym for something, and that's scary right there. It's not a synonym. Anyway, so they were a number of over 100 Google employees forwarded or liked or whatever the kids do to show that they're with you. They give you a little thumbs up there on Facebook or whatever. With this employee who went on a rant. And the rant about this, using the word family, linking families to children is offensive, said the employee. Linking families to children is offensive. Oh, it's also inappropriate, homophobic, and wrong. And right there, see, I circled the word homophobic because that's really the crux of it, folks, is the homosexualization of a generation of young people is the end of civilization. It is the end, my friends. There's no debate about that. I'm not positing that as a theory. I'm saying go back and look at the last 5,000 years of human history. And that's the crux of it, is these young people have been homosexualized. And here's the thing. My pastor, Bob Enyart, he often says that Christianity and homosexuality are mutually exclusive in the public square. One or the other will be shoved into the closet. And here's what's scary. And that, by the way, he started saying that about 25 years ago. And it is coming true right now. It's happening right now. But there's now here I am 25 years later, and here's what I'm telling you. Eventually, homosexuality and just normal families, regular people, married men and women with kids are mutually exclusive. And not just in the public square. They're mutually exclusive, period. And eventually, that's why this means the death of a civilization. Because eventually the homos and the deviants and whatever's worse than homosexuality, wherever we go next with this, eventually those deviant, corrupt people are going to become so wicked that they're going to kill all the normal people because they're going to hate them so much. And then once all the normal people are dead, then everybody dies. And so, but before that happens, some other country will come and take us over, folks. So we'll never get to the point where we actually commit mass suicide. We won't get to the point where we commit mass murder suicide because some other nation will come in and crush us and take what we have. And that's not just a theoretical intellectual exercise. This is the truth of what's happening right now. Listen to what this millennial Google employee who ranted and walked out of the room. Why did he walk out? Because that's what millennials are taught to do when they're upset. They get mad and run away and go cry. Instead of standing up and starting a debate and getting in someone's face, they run away and go cry and whimper, and then they type on Facebook how bad mean everybody is. Anyway, not that this deviant has a leg to stand on with his arguments, but they don't even know how to make an argument anymore. Anyway, listen to what this kid says. He says, there are kids without families too, you know. At which point an adult would look at him and say, yes, we know that. And how we talk about that will affect how many more children there are without families. A child without a family is not a good thing. There should be a social stigma against families deteriorating and abandoning their children. So we talk about it as if it's negative, you ignorant, stupid child. But now to stigmatize anything, that's the greatest sin. You can't stigmatize any behavior, no matter how destructive it is. Or you're a religious bigot and a zealot, and you should probably be arrested. Anyway, so the Google employees are upset with statements like, suitable for the whole family. Huh? That upsets them. They say it's totally wrong to say that. It says it only works if we have an advanced shared conception of what the whole family is. And it almost always means two adults of the opposite sex in a romantic relationship with two or more of their own children. And I'm like, okay, so that's not our shared conception anymore, because that was my shared conception. And I think that's been everyone's shared conception going back to, like, Adam and Eve. That's been the shared. And here's the problem, folks, is that in relatively short order, there's going to be a break to where there is no more shared beliefs. None of us have anything in common anymore. And there's going to be a whole generation who thinks to have anything in common is by nature discriminatory and bad and evil, and they're going to tear themselves apart. And they're going to destroy themselves. And they're gonna make it so another nation can come in and crush us and take what we have. The shared conception that the whole family is two adults of the opposite sex in a romantic relationship with two or more of their own children, that's now offensive to the millennial and the post-millennial generation. Use of the word family to mean a loving, here's what they want. Here's what the queers are demanding. The use of the word family is to mean a loving assemblage of people who may or may not live together and may or may not include people of any particular age. Stop using the word family to mean children. It's offensive, inappropriate, homophobic, and wrong. All right. You know what, you little queer? Shut up and get the hell out of here with that. I don't want your shared conception on anything I do or involved in my life in any way. And I'm not afraid to tell you that you're a petulant little bastard who should be slapped in the head. And anyway, now I'm getting upset. I apologize. I don't mean to get upset. So you wonder what could have brought the children. By the way, that's reason number 1,182 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. They may find the concept of a family to become offensive. And you don't want that to happen. Well, here, and that's what I wanted to get to with this next story, is what could cause the kids to be so screwed up this way? It can't just be the public schools and the fact that they're godless, although that's got a lot to do with it. But it's also the parents. Parents get divorced, and now the children hate their parents. With cause, by the way. It's not good to hate people without any cause. But when someone comes in and destroys your life and turns it upside down and ruins it, you have the right to be angry with them. And that's what parents who divorce do to their children, and their children rightfully hate their parents. But because our society is no longer moored to shared understanding and concept of things like God and right and wrong and heaven and hell and punishment and guilt and shame, and joy and sincerity. We don't have any more common understanding of that. And so where does the children's hatred get directed? Well, it actually gets directed back on themselves. And that's dangerous. That's dangerous, and it's scary for the kids out there. So I make fun of this petulant little punk at Google, but really down in the bottom of my heart, I have some sympathy for him. Or her. Or they. Whatever it is. All right. So the kids, by the way, at the public school. In fact, now this will be reason number 1,183 to get or keep your children out of the government schools, because they may start feeling guilt about eating, just eating food, not overeating, just eating. This comes to us from the Science Really file, where a new study says the human diet is causing catastrophic damage to the planet. It's catastrophic, I tell you. And then you read the story from the French Press Association. What is it? What is it about the human diet that's causing cat? Is it unsustainable Chilean sea bass? Is that what we're getting at here? Is it, here's what your kids get a steady diet of in the government schools. And if they watch television and movies and consume any media products on a regular basis, this is what they're getting. We've got author Tim Lang, a professor at the University of London, who says, we're in a catastrophic situation. Absolutely. Catastrophic, I tell you. So that's what. Currently, nearly 1 billion people are hungry. Another 2 billion are eating too much of the wrong foods, causing epidemics of obesity, heart disease, and diabetes. And the question is, of course, does this come by crisis? We have to change, number one. We must change. We must make changes immediately. Does the change come by crisis, or do we start planning for it now? And by the way, my nephew could use a job at the administration that's created in order to manage this. I have his resume right here. Champion. He'll volunteer to be the champion, as long as the position is a paid voluntary position. We have a quote from the World Business Council for Sustainable Development. They say, we need governments to help accelerate the change by aligning national dietary guidelines
with healthy and sustainable requirements and repurposing agricultural subsidies. It's the solution, you see. Now, gold, you see, is a dramatic shift in the global diet. Yes. We're offended by you eating all this meat. You need to eat more fruits and vegetables.
Well, folks, it's fine for your mom to tell you that you need to eat more fruits and vegetables and nuts. I think we all know that we should eat more fruits and vegetables and nuts. But the last thing we need is another, especially a global governance policy on. And so we don't need any of that, kids. Don't feel guilty about what you eat. I mean, have some discipline. Mix in a salad. But don't feel guilty about it. Don't lay awake at night wondering about, oh no, I'm destroying the planet because I'm hungry and I want a snack. You're going to have the kids' heads so screwed up, you're never going to get these kids back, for crying out loud. All right. I think that's it. The music is playing, ladies and gentlemen. I would love to do this more, but I have other things going on. So thank you for listening. That's the Weekly World Review for this week. I want to thank my friends at KGOV and at Denver Bible Church and my good friends at American Right to Life and, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.